First Peter chapter 3, picking up with verse 1. Wives, likewise, be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives, when they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear. Do not let your adornment be merely outward, arranging the hair, wearing gold, or putting on fine apparel. Rather, let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. For in this manner, in former times, the holy women who trusted in God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are if you do good and are not afraid with any terror. Husbands, likewise, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. Amen. May God add richly to his word as we consider it here today. I sometimes wish that I had followed Ray Miners in this. Ray Miners was the first pastor of this particular church, beginning in 1938, and from what I understand, that he wore a Genevan gown while preaching, that is a black robe of such for 40 years or so, and I think we still have his robe here, and I was going to wear it today, but it is too, well, you can't see it, but it might fall off me if I put it on, so if anyone here is good with a needle or knows how to fix these things, this is an advertisement to that end, but I'll just say I'm tempted to wear such a robe, and in part, one of the reasons is that last week I preached and I had a green tie on. It was a rather loud green tie. And people spoke to me afterwards about that green tie and said, oh, that looks Irish or that looks whatever and so forth. And the point of a Genevan gown or a gown is that you don't see my clothing. You don't say, oh, that looks sharp or that doesn't match today. You don't say Troborus looks good in his skinny jeans today. I would, I guess. I don't know. Those things are not neutral. And the idea of a gown is that you conceal the person and emphasize the office. Right? You conceal the person, that it's not about Troborus per se, but that Troborus stands here today as a minister of the Almighty, serving God and serving his people. Peter today talks about adornments, accessories, clothing, and the like for beauty and or status. And interesting, for those who follow Jesus, and that's the ultimate goal, right, that we would be following Jesus, that doing so, being a follower of Jesus, even makes it so that you would rethink, your clothing and your adornments in light of your heart. We'll get there, yes, in light of your heart. That is to say that following Jesus means that not only air every square inch of the globe, but even air every square inch of our clothing would be given over unto him in submission. So let's talk about this text here today. And in verse 4, we read about the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and a quiet spirit, the incorruptible beauty. And I want to begin by saying that Peter and the Bible in toto is aware of and concerned with beauty, even ultimately true beauty and incorruptible and unfading beauty. So in Genesis chapter 12, Abraham is speaking about Sarah, or Sarai at the time, and he says that, I know what a beautiful woman you are. And Rebecca is referenced as the girl was very beautiful. And Rachel was lovely in form and beautiful. And it's interesting, it's not only with respect to women that you have. Joseph was well-built and handsome. You could say he was a hunk. That's the right way to speak about those things. Or David was ruddy and had a fine appearance and handsome features, a fine-looking man David was, and his downfall was Bathsheba, and the woman was very beautiful. So we read about this a lot. Vashti displays her beauty in the book of Esther, or Esther was lovely in form and features, and you have, if you will, beauty treatments for a long time. And this is before you even get to the Song of Songs or the Song of Solomon. And I could make you all blush. I won't. By reading what we read in the Song of Solomon. I'll give you the G version. Your cheeks are beautiful with ornaments or earrings. And the reason that we read and sang Psalm 27 is that it's not just faces and bodies. In fact, the Christian goal is that we would gaze upon the beauty of the Lord. The beauty of the Lord. Or we read elsewhere that Zion is perfect in beauty, and in our English versions, what it's translated beauty is applied to houses and garments and flocks, a city, a voice. Beauty is old men in their gray hair. Phil Johnson, you look beautiful here today. Ed Clements, too. George, you're looking good. Beautiful. It's clear that the temple was built in order to be beautiful with gold and the like. So whatever Peter is talking about, he's not against beauty per se, that the Bible recognizes it and even emphasizes it and underscores it. But what Peter is talking about is some distortion, if you will, some improper, some inordinate way of looking at beauty, then we know that since the fall, all good things are misused in some manner or form. And one last reference here, it's interesting in Ezekiel chapter 16, and one of these days, I'm not going to just talk about it, I'm going to preach on Ezekiel 16, but that God says that I made Israel beautiful, I covered her with costly garments, and I adorned her with jewelry. Like it's the way that God describes, if you will, the church itself, his people, that he says, I made you beautiful. And we can also say, before we get to the particulars of some aspects of the text, that, and perhaps this is obvious, but that clothing or adornments are not neutral and they are not merely functional. That is, that they're symbolic in some manner or form. So that a wedding gown is usually white for a reason, right? It shows, it's telling us something and speaks of purity or something along those lines, that a police officer wears blue not just because it's warm or modest or a nice color, but it is a signal, if you will, to the world that there is a police officer and we are to recognize that and whatever that might mean. And historically, one of the things I can't remember the person who wrote this, but he spoke, and I knew this before reading it, but that if you went to a baseball game in the 1950s, right, people would have had, the men would have had jackets and ties, or at least many of them would have had jackets and ties. And what you wear tells something to others in one sense or another. It communicates, just like I gave the skinny jean illustration, right? What are skinny jean preachers looking to do? And I'm not looking even to criticize. I'm just saying what they're looking to do is to say that I am like you. Right? And what if you wear a gown? What is that saying? That there's an office here, that there's something special or unique about the office. And you go to, I made reference to the 1950s baseball game, but you go to certain events today and you look around, and I say to myself, I went to a graduation ceremony lately in a Presbyterian meeting, and I say, these people are Philistines. Like there's no sense of proper decor. They're indifferent to it. And we could, I'm not going to preach a sermon on it, but just like think about, like, what is casual Friday? Like, that's the, we're communicating something about who we are and how we think about these things. Or you could talk about a young man who wears his shorts so that you could see his underwear. I think some of us have seen that, right? And what they're not just, they're communicating something with the way that they wear their clothing, right? They're trying to say something about who they are and what they think of X, Y, or Z. I came into church yesterday and I had my pink shorts on. And someone, some unnamed person, made a comment about that and told me what someone else in their family would have to say if they saw me in my pink shorts. In the Bible, priests wore a particular garb. Or Jacob, when Jacob gave Joseph a robe, it wasn't not just clothing, but it was status, right? It was status. So when we look at our particular text, that is in 1 Peter chapter 3, do not let adornment be merely outward, arranging the hair and wearing gold and or putting on fine apparel, but let it be hidden in the person of the heart. And he's speaking in particular here to wives and or how women dress. Before you scream that it's unfair, which would be a silly thing to do, the reality is in life is that I take somewhere between 30 and 60 seconds to prepare to be able to go out into the public world. I do shower and shave, so just that's okay. But relative to other members in my house who are not male, that is an exponentially smaller amount than they normally spend in preparing for public life. The biggest thing that I have to do is to take a little bit of water and pat it on my head, and just to make sure that my hair is not standing straight up, because some don't like that. And I, in some of the discussions, I sometimes say, but I don't care. I used to be good looking. I am not good looking anymore. This is it. This is the best you're going to get. There's a picture in my office of Colleen and I from, let's say 35 years ago. I think it was before we were married, so it's at least 35. And people say, who is that? Like, who is that? So the focus on cosmetics and clothing and jewelry and the like, they're not not equally so, but heavily balanced toward women. Men have their sins. We talked about some of those sins last week. For instance, men tend to look at a woman as his plaything or man's slave, and we spoke in detail about how that would be sinful and wrong. And this week, Peter, or where we are, what we're focusing on, is Peter is saying that as a rule, this tends to be something more likely for women than for men. And the Greek word kosmos, which is translated adornments, is the same word for the world, and the world in a harmonious arrangement. Cosmetics is tied to the Greek word here. Cosmetics relates to this, that things would be arranged properly. And Cosmopolitan magazine, interestingly enough, is that you would be, relates to the same, the name Cosmopolitan relates that you would be free from all local attachments, a citizen of the world. And it's interesting that that's a magazine that very much so focuses on, if you will, cosmos or cosmetics or looking pretty and or allegedly pretty. And we know that some women make too much of this, and it's more than just, honey, we're late. We got to get there on time. Hurry, hurry, hurry. But that there's something deeper going on here than this, that adornments can be excessive in amount of money and time and focus. And we read about, when you read commentaries on what was happening in the first century, we read about the braiding of hair and with with upraised and interwoven with chains of gold and strings of pearls. The wife of Caligula, the Roman leader Caligula, wife of the emerald and pearls on her head, her hair, her ears, her neck, and her arms, and her fingers, and the lower class wanted to emulate or mimic her. It's really no different than today, where we see someone dressed in a particular way, and then there's an inclination to want to mimic. There's a Girardian, if you will. We want what others want here, and that too affects Christians in Peter's day and Christians here today. And to make the point, Peter says, "Don't dress like you are a call girl." Don't stand out in the room in this sense that the first thing that they would see is something that's ostentatious or effectively, yeah, see that which is gaudy and your gaudy adornments. He's saying that's improper. It's interesting that Seneca, some of the things that we've said that Peter has written and said, this is so contrary to the day. And Peter, what Peter is writing here was actually agreed by many in the culture. Seneca, at the time of Christ's writing, the time of Christ, wrote about his mother, and he said, "Unchastity, the greatest evil of our time, that jewels have not moved you nor pearls. You have never defiled your face with paints and cosmetics. Never have you fancied the kind of dress that exposed no greater nakedness by being removed. Your only ornament, the kind of beauty that time does not tarnish, is the great honor of your modesty." And Peter knows that these things, that these adornments, these cosmos or cosmetics, if you will, are a window into one's heart. They're revelatory in the same manner that the tongue is a window of one's heart. So too are these adornments. They are a window of what is in a woman or anyone's heart, for that matter. They're essential being. They are not neutral. And Peter says, rather, let it be hidden in the person of the heart with an incorruptible beauty of a gentle and a quiet spirit. So the hidden person of a heart. So he's saying, if you're a follower of Jesus, that there's something deeper, that there's something more important, something more vital that our ladies would be mindful of, and what makes a woman beautiful, and we could say feminine beauty, and something that is incorruptible, he says, right? Or that it's unfading, or that it's imperishable, or that it's lasting, or that it does not decay. And I say this gently, and there's a good point afterwards, so just stay with me if you want to write me off, but that objectively speaking, that there's an objective standard of beauty at some level, and that, I'll just say that, I'm trying to think of the nicest way to say that. But it's just obvious, so I shouldn't even hesitate. But just over time, over decades of time, that women especially lose a level of beauty. But the interesting comeback to this, or what Peter has to say, and what I'll say to the women here today, some of the women here today, that you are more beautiful today than you were 25 years ago. That you're more beautiful today than when you were in your wedding dress or when you graduated from high school or college, that you're more beautiful today. That despite having increase in years and maybe a wrinkle or two more or a pound or two more, yet the beauty that you have is unfading and imperishable. That it is unfading and imperishable. And that this beauty that you have is not only attractive in the sense that those who can recognize it, who have eyes to see, but that this beauty, that this particular beauty is precious in the sight of God himself. That God sees it as beautiful, or one translation, which is before God of great price. that it is in God's sight very precious, so that there, we all feel at some level pressure, right, to look good or image and so forth, and some more than others and so forth. And we want to be cool and we want to be in and we want to be accepted, and that's not beyond your pastor or any of us here. And the call then to be reminded especially of those who are tempted in a certain way to dress in a particular way, is that you can be beautiful before God, you can have your status before God, and that should be, in some sense, satisfactory and even of great worth to you, that God sees you when you look in the mirror and he says that here is a beautiful woman, and this woman has a beauty that will never fade, and that she is as good looking today in that sense, or even better looking today than she was 10 or 20 or 30 or 40 years ago. And I'm thankful for the many here who fit that description. Rather, let it be hidden in the person of the heart with the uncorruptible beauty of a gentle and a quiet spirit, which is precious. Which is, no, I missed that. I misread. It's not precious. It's very precious in the sight of God. It's very precious in the sight of God. So this idea, then, what does he mean when he speaks of a gentle and a quiet spirit? Perhaps more helpful, some translations talk about a meek spirit. And think of Jesus who was meek. Think of Jesus who says, I am gentle and lowly in heart. It's the same language, the same Greek there, a quiet spirit. It does not mean that you never talk, or even that you don't, it's not suggesting that you couldn't even talk a lot, but a spirit that is inward, that is calm and at peace and leads, if you will, to a peaceable life, that you are not unruly. So it's the same sense of Jesus saying, not like the person who has this quiet spirit, this gentle spirit. In some way has the spirit of deference that Jesus had when he said, not my will, but thy will. Like a giving over, this is not all about me. So the sense in which this woman who has a gentle or a quiet spirit is willing to defer, and that the idea then is that her adornments can, when misused, or can, when improperly, when one is improperly adorned, saying, everybody should look at me. Everybody should have their eyes on me when I walk into the room. That all centers around me, and the point that's being made here is that there'd be a gentleness or a quietness, and that a beauty of a gentle and a quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. In fact, this then has roots and has history in the heritage of the faith and the covenant. For in this manner, in former times, the holy women who trusted in God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are if you do good, and are not afraid with any terror. And the call then is that we would walk in those shoes of those of the patriarchs and or the wives of the patriarchs. And that's the text. They make a couple of what I'll call brief points. To both males and females, by the way. The first point is this, that male or female, the Proverbs, and one of my favorite Proverbs, is above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life. Proverbs 4:23. In other words, what Peter is speaking about here is ultimately is the heart, that he wants that we know that man looks at the outside, but that the Lord looks at the heart. And we can talk about a biblical passage where not to be a Jew merely outwardly so, but inwardly, and circumcision of the heart and so forth. And we read the particular law in Matthew 15 today, because out of the heart flow these things. Out of the heart come these sinful inclinations. And the point that I want to make then is that you would go out of your way, that you would be self-conscious to guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life. The presumption is that it needs some nurturing, that it needs some care, that it needs some, if you will, that if you just let it go, that there'll be weeds and bad things happening. And the Christian life then is one that would be mindful of our hearts, that I would be mindful if I'm a bitter person and I'm holding a grudge and then I'm churning, that I would be mindful if that I'm anxious and constantly given over to fear, that I would be mindful of those things, and that I would nurture that, and that I would think about those things in terms of the gospel and of Jesus and the Bible and what it means to be a Christian, and that I would do all in my power. And if I didn't know what to do, if this means, like, what is Troborst talking about, I would tackle Troborst afterwards and say, this is what I'm struggling with. How can I find grace in this particular situation? But I'll just say, I walk around sometimes with Bible cards, or I get up in the morning and I think about particular verses because I want to guard my heart. I say to myself that find rest, O my soul, in God alone. That He is my rock and my fortress. That I have to think about those things. That I have to feed my heart that, so to speak. And whatever that might look like for you. But don't merely be given over to bitterness or anxiousness, whatever the case may be, and be busy, and get to the next appointment and next appointment, but that you would be actively and self-consciously guarding your heart. For that is what Peter is concerned about here, is ultimately that the heart would be where it needs to be. The hidden person of the heart. That's number one. Number two has to do with more particularly than adornments. And let me say that I made reference to Ezekiel 16, where God beautifies Israel, that He says, I took you, you were naked, I clothed you, I gave you beautiful garments, I gave you all these adornments. And then He condemns them. And He says, but you trusted in your beauty. Chilling or striking. I treated you so well. And what did you do? You trusted. You trusted in your beauty. So let me make clear, I am not arguing for frumpiness, whatever that might mean. But I think you know what I'm getting at. I'm not suggesting that you should wear a burqa. We value beauty. But I do think we should be self-conscious that clothing and adornment is a sign of what is in our heart, out of the heart flows. And the general point, now I'm not even talking about modesty in a sensual sense, is that there would be a certain level of modesty so that all eyes would not immediately come to us, that there'd be a certain humility about even our adornments, that it's not all about us, and that we should not look to bring attention to ourselves. I will try not to wear my beautiful green tie again in the pulpit. And before I say this, what I'm going to say, men, stop blaming women for your unrepented of lust. And I read this now, particularly with respect to this text, that if you're interested in the quote, and it's a rough quote now, but for us, especially our women to be mindful of, if you have trouble getting into it, it's probably not modest. If you have to be careful when you sit down or bend over, it's probably not modest. If people look at any part of your body before looking at your face, it's probably not modest. And if you can see most of your private parts or an outline of your undergarments, it's probably not modest. And I at certain points or at some level, sometimes I feel more comfortable in an Orthodox Jewish setting than in your average evangelical church setting in this respect. And I think the reminder is that we have to remind ourselves that we can't live for the approval of others. That God has validated you, that you don't need others to say X, Y, or Z about you or to applaud you accordingly. And once again, we're not saying burkas, we're not saying frumpy, is that the word? F-R-U-M-P-Y? So that's number two. And then number three, I'll end with Psalm 27, which is not unrelated to our first point, but that the one thing that David said is that he would desire the Lord, that he would seek, that he would dwell, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my health, of all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord. That's the one thing. That we would see the beauty of the Lord and know the beauty of the Lord. I would have lost heart unless I had believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living, that we would wait on the Lord, that we would be of good courage, and that he would strengthen our hearts. Wait, I say, wait on the Lord so that we might dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life to behold the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple. O Lord, grant us, O Lord, encouragements even to this end, we ask. Strengthen us by the work of your Spirit. Thank you for Jesus and for the resurrection and for our call to follow him. In Jesus' name, amen.